that is the price of corn, is beginning to affect, food. The food issue and the energy issue collide.
I remember a movie back in the 50s called When Worlds Collide. I think it was written by H.G. Wells.
And George Powell film.
George Powell?
George Powell.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Yeah, that was Mensa Man. He talked about money and corn and stuff at a jovial and mostly pointless press briefing today. So tonight we have moron sounds for your listening pleasure. Put down your dinner fork, grab the Rolaids, and suck it up. You can take it. We're in the final stretch with Chuckle Nuts now. It's not going to be too much longer. You crazed liberal listeners are going to have Chuckle Nuts sound bites to kick around and giggle about. What am I saying? All right. A couple of items here that don't have anything to do with the presidential contest. Okay, one item. This is a study that was released today by the Pew Center on the states being us. For the first time in history, more than one in every 100 American adults, actually it's one in 99.1 American adults, is in jail or prison. One in 100. That took a while for that to sink in. One in every 100 American adults is in jail or prison. Now, that doesn't include the number of additional Americans who are caught up in the prison industrial complex, that is parole or probation. If you add in parole and probation, which the Pew Center didn't, I'm going to take a guess that the number is probably double that. Probably one in every 50 to 75 Americans is somehow involved in the criminal justice system. And I'm not talking about cops or prison guards. It's horrifying. Horrifying. The study indicated that the cost of this is around $50 billion spent on corrections last year. The prison industrial complex is just booming. They just love it. Put on your tinfoil hat. Okay, you got it on? All right, good. One of the reasons that the difference between crack cocaine and powder cocaine was made manifest 20 years ago was because the prison industrial complex was about to begin its big expansion program and they needed more customers. So if the ratio of crack penalties to powder cocaine penalties is roughly 100-1, well then, we spent $50 billion on corrections last year. 20 years ago, it was $11 billion. The rate of increase for prison costs was 6 times higher than for higher education spending. You know, this really is a sick society. We really are. I guess that's one of the reasons the rhetoric of Obama is inspiring to some folks. It's inspiring to me. I listen to it and I think, damn, maybe there's a chance. This really is a sick society. The cost of the Iraq war is going to top out, I read today from an analyst, top out at around $3 trillion. That's $3,000 billion for Bush's Iraq war. Jesus, God. 2,319,258 adults were held in U.S. prisons or jails at the start of this year. One out of every 99.1 adults, more than any other country in the world. The raw number is greater than the number of prisoners in China, which has a population of how many billion? What's the population of China? Larger as a factor of American population versus Chinese population, more so than in communist Russia, That's right. They're not communists anymore. It's just fascist Russia. We are number one in the number of prisoners and the number as a factor of the population, the ratio of locked up people to unlocked up people. That's us, the United States of America. And as most criminologists will tell you, it's not because crime has gone up all that much. Crime usually goes up at a fairly consistent rate. It went down during the 8 years of Bill Clinton. And part of the reason for that was, holy God, there were jobs available. But the reason the prison population is skyrocketing is because of federal sentencing guidelines, the mandatory minimum sentencing that takes away from judges their traditional power. The judge sits there and says, sustained, overruled, all right, stand up, face the jury, all right, here's your sentence. Because it's all written out for him by Republicans, Republican members of Congress. Sentencing guidelines, the disparity in the drug laws, the increase in the number of drug laws, and for that we have the Clinton administration to thank. The Clinton administration giveth, the Clinton administration taketh away. The report said for some groups the incarceration numbers are especially startling. Overall, 1 in 30 men between the ages of 20 and 34 is behind bars. But for black males in that age group, the figure is 1 in 9. That's astonishing. It's unbelievable. Kay in San Francisco wrote in, last night, Mike, I watched a film about the German author Thomas Mann. I was really struck by one of the scenes in which Mann asks his son to send his papers to him in Switzerland, where he's living in exile due to the pressure put on him by the Nazis. His son dutifully packs up the papers and sends them off. In Munich, Nazi agents intercept the package. After a delay of several weeks, the papers finally arrive in Switzerland. Mann looks through them and is stunned to find that nothing seems to be missing. Evidently, the Nazi agents were bored by his writings, which consisted mostly of diaries containing some very strong criticisms of the Nazi regime. In other words, the idiot Nazis didn't have the ability to recognize what they were looking at, and they let all of that so-called subversive material slip right through their hands. As I was watching this, Kay writes, I had to think about how most Americans would react to seeing this film. They would express outrage that the Nazis had the audacity to violate man's privacy and his rights to free expression. They would say, well, I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free. They would fail to realize that what the Nazis did to Thomas Mann and so many other German artists is exactly what the United States government is doing under the Bush crime family. We have telecommunication companies rifling through our phone calls and electronic correspondence in violation of our constitutional rights, and we have a government that seeks to protect those corporate giants from any liability for breaking the law. I also would bet that a lot of the people responsible for doing this rifling, are just as incompetent as the Nazis portrayed in the film. For me, the film wasn't just a portrayal of the life of one of my favorite authors. It served to drive home the point, again, of just how far down the path toward fascism the Bush crime family has taken us. Kay in San Francisco. Well, you can bet that once Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, those violations of the Constitution will immediately stop, right? Right? And laws will be rewritten by a absolutely safe majority in the Democratic House and the Democratic Senate. By safe, I mean veto-proof, that will restore the primacy of the U.S. Constitution and remove all this idiocy, all this collection of power into the so-called unitary executive that has come about under Bush. Right? I mean, Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama will do that almost immediately. Right? Those powers that have been so corrupted by the George Bush crime family will be returned to their rightful place within the Constitution, within the law. That's one of the first things that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama will do. Right? You broke the
into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. I mentioned this on my little mini blog today at MikeMalloy.com about media whore number one, Tim Russert, putting Senator Barack Obama on the grill the other night with the withering questions about Louis Farrakhan's support of Obama's candidacy. And Josh Epstein writes at his blog, the Joshua blog, the following. One of this week's hysterical press scandals was that Minister Louis Farrakhan praised Barack Obama's candidacy, even though Obama had previously denounced numerous Farrakhan remarks, and the Obama campaign did nothing to seek out the Farrakhan praise. Nonetheless, Tim Russert demanded that Obama jump through the hoops to prove that he has no connection to and, in fact, rejects the ideas espoused by Farrakhan that are deemed to be radical and hateful. But the other day, the equally nutbag crazy Reverend John Hagee, a white evangelical Protestant who is the pastor of a sprawling megachurch in Texas, enthusiastically endorsed John McCain. Did McCain have to jump through the same hoops which Russert and others set up for Obama? Did McCain have to denounce Hagee's extremism and reject his support? No. Quite the opposite. McCain said he was very honored, my friends, to receive this endorsement. And when asked about some of Hagee's more twisted views, John McCain responded, "All I can tell you, my friends, is that I'm very proud, my friends, to have Pastor John Hagee's support, my friends." Okay. Little show of hands here. How many of you truth seekers know about this absolutely crazy preacher, John Hagee? There's one. Okay, that's what I thought. Not so many. So here's a small sampling of the belief system of this McCain supporter, who Senator McCain welcomes with open arms. All Muslims are programmed to kill, and we can thus never negotiate with any of them. From an NPR interview Hagee gave to Terry Gross in 2006. Terry Gross, if you use the Bible as a basis for policy, is there any room for compromise? And if you use the Bible as a basis for policy, should Muslims use the Quran as the basis for their policy? And then again, what possible basis is there for compromise at that point? Reverend Hagee, there's really no room for compromise between radical Islam. Terry Gross, I'm not talking about radical Islam. I'm just talking about Islam in general. Well, Islam in general. Those who live by the Quran have a scriptural mandate to kill Christians and Jews. Really? I didn't know that. Another one of Hagee's favorite points. God caused Hurricane Katrina to wipe out New Orleans because they had a gay pride parade the week before and was filled with sexual sin. From the same interview, Hagee. All hurricanes are acts of God because God controls the heavens. I believe that New Orleans had a level of sin that was offensive to God, and they were recipients of the judgment of God for that. The newspaper carried the story in our local area. It was not carried nationally. There's going to be a homosexual parade there on the Monday that the Katrina came. And the promise of that parade was that it was going to reach a level of sexuality never demonstrated before in any of the other gay pride parades. So I believe that the judgment of God is a very real thing. I know there are people who demur from that, but I believe that the Bible teaches that when you violate the law of God, that God brings punishment, sometimes before the day of judgment, and I believe that the Hurricane Katrina was, in fact, the judgment of God against the city of New Orleans. You want some more? This sick son of a bitch. You want some more of this Christian psychopath? Okay, here's some more. Hagee believes that the president's support for... I believe the president's support for Israel fulfills the biblical injunction to protect the Jewish state because they're going to play a pivotal role in the second coming. Now, these roles are... these views, I should say, are not unrelated to Hagee's support for McCain. Quite the contrary, Hagee cited McCain's so-called pro-Israel views, his belligerence towards Iran, and his social conservatism as reasons for the endorsement, And in the critical contrast to Obama and Farrakhan, McCain actually seems to share some of Hagee's more twisted views, as evidenced by McCain's joyful singing, bomb, 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 my friends, bomb, bomb, Iran, bomb, 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 my friends. Now, why do you suppose the sick mainstream media and its highly paid prostitutes like Tim Russert, no offense to sex workers, get all insistent and thuggish when they confront Obama with a Farrakhan endorsement and yet never, ever question thugs like Senator McCain when it comes to his deep, intimate, hugging relationship with a psychopathic, murderous, Christ killer like John Hagee? We've got a break here, so I'll give you a few minutes to consider your answer. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
26 before the hour. So McCain, apparently McCain will do for the religious right exactly what Monica Lewinsky did for Bill Clinton, and have no shame about it whatsoever. I've never seen a guy like this, this McCain. When was it that he referred to Falwell and the other one, Pat Robertson, as agents of intolerance? Do you remember that? Do you remember what these right-wing sons of bitches, these religious liars, these Christ killers did to him in the 2000 primary in South Carolina? Do you remember? You know, it was Jerry Falwell, or was it Pat Robertson? I know, it was one of those Christians who bankrolled, if not voiced, the robot dialing that went out to people trying to convince folks that John McCain was John McCain's wife was a drug addict. John McCain deliberately left POWs behind in Vietnam, and that John McCain's adopted Bangladeshi, I believe, a child was a Negro. Oh my God. These are not Christians. These are people who rape and pillage the body of Christ every single day. John Hagee, Dobson, Robertson, the lumpen freak Falwell before he made his trip into hell. These people will do anything. They will rip Christ off the cross and beat his body against the ground in order to make their point. They're disgusting. They are vile and filthy. And why is McCain sucking up to them? Well, the answer to that is very simple. McCain will do anything, anything, to become president. He doesn't care. This week, McCain had joined his campaign Rod Parsley. Have you ever seen this monster on television, this Rod Parsley? This is a guy who will willingly, gleefully, with a smile on his face, slice the neck of everything that single Jew in Israel in order to make way for Parsley's Messiah. And yet he claims to be a friend of Israel. Yeah, oh, until that great getting up morning, then I'm not going to be a friend. I'll kill the Christ killers. I'll get them. He is the founder and president, Rod Parsley, is of the Center for Moral Clarity. And he's also a leader of this extreme right-wing, Jew-hating Patriot Pastors. This is a campaign that was infamous for referring to political opponents as secular jihadists, hordes of hell, forces of darkness. McCain just, I think Tuesday, accepted the support of John Hagee, the founder of Christians United for Israel. Hagee is another one. There's not a Jew. That's why Joshua Epstein's blog is so right on the money, because there's not a Jew in America, and probably not one in Israel, who doesn't understand that these Christian fundamentalists in this country hate them. The support of Israel, the support of the Jewish faith, is simply a means to an end for these thugs. The end being, let's pile the bodies as high as we can so that Christ will be happy and will step down on the bloody, slippery pile of corpses and declare his kingdom. And at that point, of course, all the Jews will be given a chance. And Hagee and Robertson, people of their filthy ilk, will stand there with their knives ready. And they'll say, Jew, do you accept Christ as the Messiah? And for the Jewish folks who say no, instant execution. Why? Why do Israelis, or especially Israeli Jews, allow these pigs into their country? Why? We have made it clear that the Bush crime family has made it official that every single Muslim, I don't care what they say, it's what they're demonstrating. Every single Muslim that lives outside of this country, and probably a lot of them live inside the country, are absolute threats to American sovereignty, American imperialism, American whatever. Why is the government of Israel not willing to say the same thing about these filthy, disgusting, evangelical, fake Christians? Because they are a threat not just to the sovereignty of Israel. They are a threat to every Jew in the world. Were I a Jew, I don't think I would fear so much the Muslims. Jews and Muslims at one time, before they were pried apart by political ideas that are sick and disgusting, Jews and Muslims were natural allies against the spreading Church of Rome. It was Jews and Muslims who were put to the knife during the Spanish Inquisition if they didn't immediately convert. And even then, we don't like your conversion. There goes another head. Ron Parsley, whom McCain has called a spiritual guide. Oh my God. Here's what Ron Parsley has called for in the past. He said that hate crimes legislation is a deceptive ploy of the homosexual agenda. Rod Parsley has advocated criminal prosecution, if not execution, of adulterers. Rod Parsley has compared Planned Parenthood to the Nazis. Rod Parsley declared, I came to incite a riot. Man your battle stations, ready your weapons, lock and load, at a war on Christians conference. Rod Parsley urged voters to let the Reformation begin. Shout it out! You're going to carry the bloodstained banner of the cross of Christ, the length and breadth of the Buckeye State. He said that at a political rally in Ohio. This is McCain's spiritual guide? Now, not to have a right-wing supporter feel left out, McCain also said, I'm very proud, my friends, to have Pastor John Hagee's support. My friends, Hagee, I just mentioned to you, but Hagee has predicted also that God will allow terrorists to strike the United States if the U.S. government is insufficiently supportive of Israel. Until, of course, that great getting-up warning. On the great getting-up morning, the Jews are just so much more meat for the Christian evangelicals to carve up. Hagee has preached that U.S. invasion of Iran is foretold in the book of Esther. in the book of Esther. Yeah, it's right there. Mr. Hagee has claimed that George Washington designed the Great Seal of the United States to include a hidden menorah in the eagle's tail feathers. It's right there. If you look close, you'll see the menorah right there in the eagle's tail feathers. The Reverend John Hagee has accused the Catholic Church of joining with Hitler in a conspiracy to exterminate the Jews. God damn it, I want to be able to exterminate them. The ones who won't convert to our Lord Jesus Christ when he returns. And of course he argued that Hurricane Katrina was in fact the judgment of God against that corrupt, evil, sinful city of New Orleans. The political director of People for the American Way, Mary Jean Collins, said today, quote, "For a man the media loves to call a maverick, McCain sure spends a lot of time courting the religious right. McCain's embracing Parsley and Hagee is a sign that either he's changed his mind about what constitutes an agent of intolerance, or he's decided that a little extremism and pursuit of power is no vice," end quote. Well, with all due respect, Mary Jean Collins, I would not put it so gently, McCain is a sick son of a bitch who will do for the religious right what Monica did for Bill Clinton, and when he raises his head, there'll be a big smile on his face. My God. So media whore number one, Tim Russert, sits there the other night, and pretty much with that smirk on his face and all those bumps, what are those bumps on Tim Russert's moon face? What are those bumps? Tim, get to a doctor. Get it checked out. Go. Don't be like John McCain. Don't wait till they have to saw away half of your face. Go, Tim. Quickly. I digress. Tim Russert sits there and forces Barack Obama to explain why someone Barack Obama has already said, look, I don't want anything to do with this guy. Why Barack Obama, or why Farrakhan endorsed him. I have yet to hear media whore number one, Tim Russert, who loves to have his little exclusive tete-a-tetes with John McCain on Beat the Press. I have yet to hear Tim Russert say, John, what about these religious crazies, these fake Christians who hate Jews and hate Muslims and hate liberals and hate gays and hate Democrats and hate everything they can possibly hate? Why, John? Explain to us why you are doing to them what Monica did for Bill Clinton. Why is that, John? I've yet to hear that. Do you think we ever will? This is Nova M Radio. I know it's true. Cause I saw it on TV. I know it's true. Oh, so true.
Rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. And by the way, for the Republicans or the conservatives who listen to this program in the darkness with the shades drawn, if you are a parent or a grandparent, do you know that McCain is rated as America's worst senator for children? Yeah, that's right. Today, the Children's Defense Fund Action Council released its 2007 nonpartisan congressional scorecard. The Children's Defense Fund reports some positive news, particularly that average scores for members of Congress, quote, improved from the previous 3 years, with more members scoring 100% than in 2004, 2005, or 2006, end quote. However, some of the senators didn't fare so well, like Senator John McCain received a 10% rating, the worst in the United States Senate. John McCain. Now, by comparison, Republicans Senator Kay Bailey Hutchinson of Texas, Orrin Hatch of Utah, Gordon Smith of Oregon received 70% ratings, and they are Republicans. McCain's score has steadily declined over the years. In 2004, from the Children's Defense Fund, he received a 38% approval. In 2005, 22%. In 2006, 10%. Well, he held his own, 10% in 2007. Now, the Children's Defense Fund ranks members on 10 votes affecting children: increasing the minimum wage, increasing funding for children with disabilities, protecting children from unsafe medications, the budget resolutions in the 2008 budget that target children, a reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program, SCHIP, the College Cost Reduction and Access Act, SCHIP motion to concur, the so-called DREAM Act for children, funding child health and education, and improving Head Start programs. John McCain received a 10% rating. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Orrin Hatch, Gordon Smith, all Republicans, received 70% rankings. Some of the members of the Senate and House received 100%. So if you are a Republican and you're or a Democrat and you're saying to yourself, well, you know what, if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, to hell with it, I'm voting for John McCain. Or if Barack Obama gets the nomination, to hell with it, I'm voting for John McCain. If you want to do that, and you have children or grandchildren or nieces and nephews, or relatives of any stripe, maybe little cousins, any children in your family whatsoever, your extended family, if you vote for McCain, you are saying to the children in your family, I don't give a goddamn if you die. I don't care anything about you. You can eat poison. You can take poison medicine. You can get no education. You can have no health care. And I don't care, because I don't like Hillary Clinton. I don't like Barack Obama. So, goddammit, I'm going to vote for John McCain. That's what I'm going to do. I'll show that damn Democratic Party. I'll vote for John McCain. Think about that. Man. McCain is, like I and many other people have said, if you liked George Bush, you are going to love John McCain. I've been trying for the past couple of nights to work in an Uncle Mike story corner about Cuba. And I think we're going to try to do it tonight. Also coming up, we have some sound that we want to play for you, as mentioned, from Bush's weird press availability. Oh, by the way, as we're getting ready to take this major break here, Chuck Rosenthal, who is, for 30 years, he had a legal career in Harris County, Texas. That would be Houston. I think that's, isn't that Houston? Isn't Harris, or is that Dallas? Hell, I don't even know. Harris County, as a prosecutor, Jovial Chuck lit firecrackers in the stairwell of the district attorney's office soon after the 1995 Oklahoma City bombings. Isn't that funny? After he was elected district attorney in 2000, he called the death penalty a biblical proposition, and he lobbied unsuccessfully to maintain Texas's sodomy law that the U.S. Supreme Court had struck it down as a result of a Georgia case. He's back in the headlines again, old Chuck is. Last December, as part of a federal civil rights lawsuit into how justice is handed out in the county, he turned over the partial contents of his government email account. Oh, my, he forgot to hit the delete key. Black ministers called for this Republican pissant to resign because of racist material, including a cartoon depicting an African-American suffering from a, quote, fatal overdose of watermelon and fried chicken, end quote. Don't you love that? Huh? This guy's a prosecutor. There were adult video clips, that means naked people doing each other, and love notes from old Chuck to his secretary, who was his mistress during a previous marriage. Chuck Rosenthal says in one of the emails, I love you so much, I want to kiss you behind your right ear. She writes back, go spend time with your family. as eye-opening, according to Newsweek, this is Newsweek, as eye-opening as his emails were, it's the ones that disappeared that might cause him more trouble. Old Chuck Rosenthal deleted thousands of emails that investigators in the civil rights case wanted, so his actions could lead to obstruction of justice charges. You see, the messages were deleted after he received a subpoena for them, just like the Bush crime family did with all the emails demanded by Congress. Oh, never mind. So once again, the biggest lawbreakers, the biggest hypocrites, the child molesters, the racists, the thugs, the adulterers, the con artists, are all clustered like a bunch of sharks eating, eating somebody who fell overboard. They're all Republicans. They're all conservatives. Every single one of them. Damn you, Republicans. Damn you, you're disgusting. And you're ruining my country. And the day is coming. The day is coming where you are going to be held accountable. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. And before we leave the topic of John McCain's sucking up to the Christian fanatics, who are not really Christian, I certainly grant that. You know, Hagee's got 18,000 bobbleheads who attend the services at his church down there in Texas. All of these suckers seem to come from southern states. Well, except Rod Parsley. Where's Rod Parsley from? I don't know. Is he from Ohio? Anyway, before we leave... Oh, by the way, I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Novam Radio Network. Welcome back. Before we leave, McCain, who will do anything, say anything, it doesn't matter, in order to get somebody, anybody's endorsement. He wants Bush's endorsement. He wants Pappy Bush's endorsement. He wants these religious nutbags endorsement. But before we leave, let's listen to this little bit from the now dead Jerry. Was it Jerry Falwell? The now dead Jerry Falwell, when he and the soon to be dead Pat Robertson were sitting around talking about the reasons the United States was attacked on September 11th, 2001. And keep in mind that these are the people who John McCain now just loves.
I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians, the ACLU, People for the American Way, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the finger in their face and say, you helped this happen.
Well, I point a finger in your... Well, I can't, because you're dead. Oh, damn. We mentioned last night about the Foundation for Defense of Democracies and how it contained the names of some Democrats and how it is nothing but a neo-Nazi front organization that is now using its vast resources to defeat first-term Democratic members of Congress by running TV commercials that are filled with lies, insults, and innuendos. But that's what the Republicans always do. There's not a Republican in America that would know the truth if it came up and bit him on the ass. But here's Donna Brazile's statement on her leaving the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. She writes, as a member of the Board of Advisors of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, I strongly condemn their misleading and reckless ad campaign. The organization is using fear-mongering for political purposes, and worse, their scare tactics have the effect of emboldening terrorists and our enemies abroad by asserting our intelligence agencies are failing to do their job. I am deeply disappointed that they would use my name since no one has consulted me about the activities of the group in years. When I first joined the foundation several years ago, it was a bipartisan organization that was committed to defending democratic values and protecting the nation against threats posed by radical Islamic terrorism. Unfortunately, due to the influence of their funders, in the last few years, the Foundation for Defense of Democracy has morphed into a radical right-wing organization that is doing the dirty work for the Bush administration and congressional Republicans. I have made it clear to the organization that these types of lies undercut our national security and serve only to divide us. Furthermore, I reiterated to the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy that I no longer wish to be affiliated with such a group and have asked them to remove my name from the board. In this post-9/11 world, Americans should not be attacking other Americans. We should be standing together to make this country safer and stronger against the real threat of terrorism. That's Donna Brazile's comment as of the 25th of February, which is what, Monday? The airwaves and the media are just, and damn MSNBC and NBC and ABC and local channels and cable networks, damn them for running this garbage. Damn them. Damn them all to hell. The network that produces a punk like Tim Russert, who will force Barack Obama to explain why somebody supports him, is the same network that will run commercials. Does NBC need the money that badly? You're owned by General Electric. You're the one of the biggest war-making contractors on the face of the earth. Oh, I guess I just answered my own question. Never mind. One more thing about this sick bastard Hagee. This is from the New York Times. It was written by a Christian Palestinian, Daoud Kitab. He has written a book, The End Times. I don't have the title here, but this is what he wrote. It was in the New York Times. He writes, a small minority of evangelical Christians have entered the Middle East political arena with some of the most unchristian statements I've ever heard. Reverend Hagee, a popular televangelist who leads the 18,000-member Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, ratcheted up his rhetoric this year with the publication of his book, Jerusalem Countdown, in which he argues that a confrontation with Iran is a necessary precondition for Armageddon, which will mean the death of most Jews in his eyes, and the second coming of Christ. In the best-selling book, Hagee insists the United States must join Israel in a preemptive military strike against Iran to fulfill God's plan. I wonder about the 18,000 lemmings who attend his church. Goes on to say here, the Republicans have long been given a pass on courting the most warped and twisted religious figures around. George Bush spoke regularly with Pat Robertson, never once forced to denounce or reject him. In 2006, Hagee, in a private meeting with Uber White House neocon and convicted criminal Elliot Abrams, who just happens to run Middle East policy in the Bush administration, he met with him afterwards. Hagee gushed that he and Abrams, like he and Lieberman, share similar views toward the Middle East. Hagee said, we felt we're on the right track. Where did I get this? Oh, this is from either Think Progress or Salon.com. I don't know, and I'm sorry. excuse me. Watching the media's treatment of Farrakhan and Hagee, is it possible to imagine a more transparent and grotesque double standard? In the framework of the Russert-led establishment press, white evangelical Christians are by definition entitled to great respect, no matter how radical, extreme, and hateful their professed views are. These are, after all, religious Christians, people of faith! And as such, it is wrong, even bigoted, to suggest they should be repudiated There's nothing ever radical, hateful, or dangerous about the views of white evangelical Christians like Hagee. Thus, while evangelical ministers are free to advocate American wars based on biblical mandates, rant hatefully against Islam, and argue that natural disasters occur because God hates gay people, they are still fit for good company. An important and cherished part of our mainstream American political system, the entire Republican establishment is permitted actively to lavish them with praise and court their support without the slightest backlash or controversy. Both George Bush and Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert sent formal greetings to the 2006 gathering of Hagee's group. By contrast, black Muslim ministers like Farrakhan, or even black Christian ministers like the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, are held with deep suspicion, even contempt. McCain is free to hug and praise the Reverend Hagees of the world, but Obama is required to prove over and over and over and over that he does not share the more extreme views of black ministers. How come Tim Russert, in all the times he sits and chats with Lieberman and McCain and various high Bush officials, how come Russert never reads all of the inflammatory, disgusting, crazed, rapture is coming, all Jews will burn, kill all Muslims, hurricanes are punishment against gays pronouncements from John Hagee and James Dobson and Pat Robertson, and demand that John McCain and George Bush and Joe Lieberman denounce those views and reject their support? What's the difference, really? Well, remember, Pat Robertson was the one, among other things, that said that Ariel Sharon's stroke, yeah, he's still alive, was God's punishment for Ariel Sharon giving up Gaza. Oh, my God. I hate these people. I don't know who I hate worse, these fake Christian rat bastards or Russert.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. At the bottom of the hour, when we come back from the break, we're going to play some of this Bush nonsense. A couple emails here. This is from Roz in Canada. She writes, Mike, is it some kind of right-wing Bible thumpers rule for the men to have their hair blow-dried a mile high, pompadour fashion? Also, the women are tarted up with more makeup than a corpse in a coffin. The Texas-style megachurch Baptists still dress in the 50s fashion. The rest of the world sees this, and it scares them silly. Seems these Southerners live in a world unto themselves. Very strange people. By the way, Mike, how come all these weird preachers are well-known up here in Canada, but not in the U.S.? They're a source of annoyance or amusement, depending on how seriously you take them. Yet for some reason, Americans are less cognizant of what is going on within their own borders. They couldn't be further from God if they tried, and I find them a loathsome lot. Rosalind, yeah, well, I don't know. I guess it's because it's American television. I certainly don't include Canada in this, but for so much of the world, they'd love to beam out, you know, they all have these big satellite operations, and they beam this garbage into emerging country. I hate the term third world countries. They beam their garbage and their lies and their hatred into countries around the world, most of which may have one television in the village and a dish, you know, for a dish network, usually put there by some right-wing, mouth-breathing, phlegm-swallowing Christian missionary. Here, put this here, and y'all come on over here and watch this. But Americans, you know, we're too busy trying to figure out how we're going to get health insurance for our kids or pay the mortgage. We don't pay any attention to these thugs. Unless you're one of these right-wing, mouth-breathing, polyester-wearing suckers who attend these white Christian events, and some of them black. That's another thing that amazes the hell out of me. Sometimes I look at these shows on TV because, like Rosalind or like Canadians, I find them utterly entertaining. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm seeing white faces and black faces. And I'm thinking to myself, what? What? Oh, well. This is from Philip. Mike is a NOVEM founding member. I do not understand both Clinton. I do understand. Both Clinton and Obama are corporate candidates. But I think the difference between Clinton and Obama are their war stances. For Clinton, yay. Obama, nay. I was watching this movie called Taxi to the Dark Side, nominated and won an Oscar for Best Documentary. Chilling stuff. And to know Clinton went out of her way to authorize the war twice. No sympathy for you, Mrs. Clinton, because unlike John Edwards, you never apologized. Early in these debates, Obama was made fun of by Clinton about negotiating with Iran's Imadin crazy, the president of Iran. After that, I was hell-bent on seeing Obama get the nomination for the general election. Not only am I an African-American, but I'm an American. But damn, when I see Obama getting sucker punched by Clinton's barbs and daggers, I get mad. How does he handle himself? Calm and cool. Now, I don't want to hear from the Clintons' lack of advantage going into this thing. She had all the money and the power, but from who? Not the people, Mike. And if she loses Ohio and Texas, will she count on these superdelegates to count Florida and Michigan? And folks that say they're going to vote for insane McCain instead of Obama, I say, great. You thought George Bush was bad. I'm already seeing the reactions from other countries if Obama wins. The French guy, Sarkozy, I think that is his name, says Barack is naive. You got a lot of racism around the world and a ton in this country, but I think that John Edwards needs to be vice president. He would balance the proverbial universe. My approach to life is always to expect the worst, because usually after that it's not so bad. P.S. Every time Clinton rips Obama, I give him $5. That's why his campaign is raising all this cash, or so I would like to think. Philip. Yeah, Philip. You got that right. And I got this from Bart Kopp's website. Dear Bart, I'm an African American who has not bought into the mainstream media's ploy to cut Senator Clinton off at her knees. The mainstream media has shamefully played the race card over and over against her, and I'm very saddened to realize that huge numbers in the African-American community appear to have fallen for the rotten bait. Maybe because I'm a native New Yorker, currently residing in Texas, and I'm highly aware of the senator's effectiveness in my beloved home state, that I knew right away I would cast my vote for her. I'm definitely not an Obama detractor. I have great respect for him, and I don't have to hate one in order to prefer the other. I'm simply a realist. The Republicans are licking their chops, waiting for phase one of their election plan to be completed, and that would be the moment that Obama wins the nomination. It seems that the notion of Republican infiltration into the Democratic primaries is dismissed as just some crazy conspiracy theory. Worse yet, many of us are not even aware of this dynamic, or choose not to be aware. Those sewer rats say they would rather face Clinton, but I have learned by close observation that they say the exact opposite of what they mean. I truly do not understand how the voting public could be so gullible. Can't we remember how Karl Rove manipulated the last election? I do not base my choice on race or gender, but on common sense and the willingness to look at a person's record objectively. That's it. No complicated rubric involved. As for Obama supporters, I think it's great that people are passionate about his candidacy. It's always good for society when we actually have viable choices to consider. Debbie. I love Bart Kopp. And he is backing Hillary Clinton all the way to the bitter end. And I love him. He's a great American. Make some sense and to rearrange. Rearrange the way you think. Hesitate, lose control, and you will sink. Think fast, think for yourself. Don't let the world be wrong now because it is so. It's so full of greed because it is so. It's so. So much need for independence, solidarity, unity, and prosperity. We'll be right back.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Talk to Jesus through the Reverend Hagee. All right, last email, and then we're going to move on to Mensa Man talking about money and stuff. This is from our writer in residence. Hi, Mike. I have a few thoughts about the Democratic primary contest. On days like today when I spend a lot of time on the computer, I listen to liberal talk radio all day, mostly KPOJ in Portland. There's a phenomenon I've been noticing for a couple of months that seems to have gotten worse recently. I call it calls from the Clinton whinettes. Now, I'm not thrilled with either of the Democratic candidates. Heck, I still have a Gore Obama 2008 sticker on my car. But like you, I will vote for whichever of them ends up the nominee. In fact, after 12 years of Republican congressional rule and 7 years of outright fascism, I would probably vote for the proverbial yellow dog if it were running as a Democrat. But Hillary's campaign is not making it easy for me. I'm a professional, well-educated white woman over 50. Statistically, I should be solidly on the Hillary bandwagon, but I'm not. And my lack of enthusiastic support is partly about her warmongering votes. If she really didn't think George would actually use the authorization to use force in Iraq when you and I and everyone else with half a brain knew that's exactly what he was planning to do, she's too stupid to be president. I'm also unhappy about her support of NAFTA, her lack of sponsorship of any meaningful legislation in her term as a senator, and so forth. But the reason I'm really pissed off at her has to do with how she's allowing her campaign to be run and the obscene way in which she and her campaign are trying to abuse the gender issue. Yes, there is still a firm glass ceiling for women in this country. Yes, a woman has to work at least twice as hard as a man in most situations to get the same recognition. Yes, misogyny is rampant in this country and is evident in how she is portrayed in this campaign. But fill in terms for a person of color in the previous statement, and they are just as true. I don't hear Obama, his campaign, or his supporters whining about how criticism of him equals bashing African Americans. But all day, every day, I hear Clinton surrogates, callers who bill themselves as Clinton supporters, and Hillary herself making comment from subtle to blatant that imply that criticism of her, or even lack of support for her, is somehow undermining the cause of women's rights for all eternity. And that any criticism of her or her positions, no matter how objective or based in fact, is somehow Hillary bashing and woman bashing. Mike, I'm so sick of this. I and most of my friends have chosen to support Obama not because he's black and not because we're mindless cult followers who have been sucked in by his pretty speech-making, and we have chosen not to support Hillary, although, as I said, I will vote for her if she's the nominee. We've chosen not to support Hillary for a number of reasons, none of which have to do with the fact that she's a woman. I am not supporting Hillary because I don't like a lot of her positions and past votes! And I don't trust her and her DLC connections or her cozy relationship with lobbyists. I don't like her campaign spokesman, especially Mark Penn, or their attitudes. And I don't like her arrogance and sense of entitlement. And I especially don't like seeing the very real issue of discrimination against women flaunted as some kind of a badge of honor and excuse for all of her lousy decisions. She came to this contest as the presumptive nominee. She clearly thought she deserved this nomination. Her campaign figured they would have wiped the floor with the rest of the candidates by Super Tuesday and didn't even bother with a plan B or ground game beyond that date. Her current struggle to stay in the race has to do with those things, not with her gender. And a note to Clinton supporters. In my humble opinion, she is not the best candidate. And although this may be news to you, it is possible to hold that opinion without being misogynist or traitor to the women's movement. If you want me to support her, stop whining and give me some positive reasons why this person would be a good president. Being a woman is not enough. Neither is sympathy for her sticking by her philandering husband, by the way, but that's another discussion. End of rant. Bridget. Yeah, I hear you. All right, Mensa Man today, talking about money and stuff. He had a lengthy press conference today to discuss the disaster that is U.S. economy. try to prove he's still wise about the money, as he likes to say. The first question out of the box was this. Mr. President, bad economic news continues to pile up. The latest today with the GDP barely growing. Are you concerned that a sagging economy in hard times will help defeat John McCain like it did your father in 1992? And how far are you willing to go to prevent that?
I'm concerned about the economy because I'm concerned about working Americans. I'm concerned about people who want to, you know, put money on the table.
And food in their wallets?
Save for their kids' education.
Education?
That's why I'm concerned about the economy. I want Americans working. And there's no question the economy has slowed down. You just cited another example of slowdown.
Yeah.
I don't think we're headed to recession.
Nah.
But no question we're in a slowdown. And that's why we acted, and acted strongly, with over $150 billion worth of pro-growth economic incentives.
Yeah.
And so we acted robustly. And now it's time to determine whether or not this pro-growth package will actually work. Yeah. The checks will start going out in the second week of May.
Wait, sir?
And the purpose is to encourage our consumers.
Excuse me?
Purpose is give them money. Their own to begin with, by the way. Give them money to help deal with the adverse effects of the decline in housing value.
What? Everybody's going to get $600 to deal with the adverse effects of the decline in housing value. Mr. Chucklenuts, how about the adverse effects of high unemployment or high energy costs or high gas and grocery costs or lack of affordable health care or any of the other myriad economic nightmares you've created? And wait a second, what does he say? Now it's time to determine whether or not this pro-growth package will actually work, but didn't all your experts say this last tax rebate was the only hope? What do you mean, if it will work? Didn't you virtually guarantee it would work in speech after speech? Why the weasel words now, chuckle nuts? Because you know damn good and well that sending a pissy little check to people who will probably use it to make a payment of some sort or pay down a credit card is going to do nothing. Nothing. Now, the next reporter asked about the situation in Russia and the replacement of Bush's favorite foreign soul man, Vladimir Putin, with Dmitry Medvedev. The reporter says, Mr. President, the Democratic candidates, when asked about the new Russian leader, Dmitry Medvedev, didn't appear to know a great deal about him. I wonder what you can say about him, how much power you think he's really got with Putin still in the picture. And critics would say, Mr. President, that you badly misjudged Vladimir Putin.
I don't know much about Medvedev either. And what'll be interesting to see is who comes to who represents Russia at the G8. For example.
Oh, that's okay.
It'll be interesting to see. It'll help, I think, give some insight as to how Russia intends to conduct foreign policy after Vladimir Putin's presidency. And I can't answer the question yet. I can say that it's in our interest to continue to have relations with Russia.
But isn't there something you took away and you can offer to your successor about how it's risky in the process of sizing up your Russian counterpart, don't you think?
Here's what I learned. I learned that it's important to establish a personal relations with leaders, even though you may not agree with them.
Oh.
Certain leaders.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I'm not going to have a personal relationship with Kim Jong-il.
Oh, okay.
And our relationships are such that that's impossible.
Yeah, okay.
But U.S.-Russian relations are important. As you know, Putin's a straightforward, pretty tough character.
Yeah.
When it comes to his interests. Well, so am I.
Oh.
And, you know, we've had some headbutts. Diplomatic headbutts.
Well, is that like a butthead, you jerk? Am I the only one who wonders just how special this relationship really is? Sing along now. They say that breaking up is hard to do. Putin and Bush? The only reason Bush discovered Vlad was his soulmate is because Bush would like to run the United States the way Vlad runs Russia. He says, I don't know much about Medvedev, mispronouncing his name, of course. You're right. You don't know much about Medvedev or about Vlad or about basic math or about elementary grammar either. So what? Oh, my God. On Congress folding yet again on the Telecom Spy on Americans Act, next reporter says, Mr. President, if you can get Congress... Well, wait a minute. I guess, can we squeeze this one in? Yeah, okay. If you can get the Congress to protect telecom companies from lawsuits, but then there's no recourse for Americans who feel that they've been caught up in this. So if Americans don't have any recourse, are you just telling them, when it comes to their privacy, to suck it up?
If people who analyze the program fully understand that America's civil liberties are well protected.
Uh-huh.
There is a constant check to make sure that our civil liberties of our citizens aren't...
What?
You know, are treated with respect. And that's what I want. And that's what all Americans want.
Oh, really?
Now, let me talk about the phone companies.
Okay.
You cannot expect phone companies to participate if they feel like they're going to be sued.
Right!
The government said to those who have alleged to have helped us that it is in our national interest and it's legal.
Alleged?
It's in our national interest because we want to know who's calling who. From overseas into America, we need to know.
Alleged?
It was legal.
Oh,
and
sure.
Now, all of a sudden, plaintiff's attorneys, class action plaintiff's attorneys.
Damned attorneys,
I don't want to try to get inside their head. I suspect they see, a financial gravy train.
Oh, God.
Are trying to sue these companies. It's unfair. It is patently unfair.
Hey, he's channeling Rumsfeld.
And secondly, these lawsuits create doubts amongst those who will... whose help we need.
Oh, who would that be?
And the American people expect our Congress to give the professionals the tools they need. To listen to foreigners who may be calling into the United States.
Oh, my God. This paranoid, schizophrenic son of a bitch. Wow, way to make friends with other nations, Raisin Brain. He says it's unfair? Psst, chuckle nuts. If what you were doing was legal, there'd be no basis for a lawsuit, would there? Huh? Why does that escape you, you idiot? And there's no reason to enact a law granting telecoms immunity from prosecution for their illegal spying activities if it was legal to begin with! Oh, never mind.
My ass in executions unsurpassed, surplus gone so fast, divided not united. What's he want to do now? What's he going to try? Does he really think Armageddon is nigh? Does he care if children die? La 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 la. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
We can explore for natural gas in Alaska without damaging the the environment.
The what?
Who made me judge and jury?
All right, just two more. You've been very patient. This is Mensa Man talking about money and stuff today, returning to the economic disaster that he created. Another reporter asked about the outrageous price of gas. Listen to Bush's answer. He's surprised to learn that gasoline might hit $4 a gallon. Oh, but then he claims he's been carefully considering the fuel crisis. What a buffoon.
Wait, what did you say?
The question is, Mr. President, what's your advice to the average American who's hurting now, facing the prospect of $4 a gallon gasoline? A lot of people facing...
Wait, what did you say? You're predicting $4 a gallon gasoline?
A number of analysts are predicting $4 a gallon gasoline this spring when they reformulate.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I know it's high now.
And and the other economic problems facing people beyond your concern that you stated here and your expectations for these stimulus checks. What kind of hope can you offer to people?
Keep the tax cuts permanent.
That'll help.
There's a lot of economic uncertainty. You just said that. You just said the price of gasoline may be up to $4 a gallon, or some expert told you that. And that creates a lot of uncertainty. If you're out there wondering whether or not, you know, what your life is going to be like, and you're looking at $4 a gallon, that's uncertain.
Yeah.
And when you couple that with the idea that their taxes may be going up in a couple of years.
They will?
That's double uncertainty.
Oh.
But we need to be finding more oil and gas at home if we're worried about becoming dependent on oil overseas. The more oil we find at home, the better off we're going to be in terms of the short run.
What's over there?
And our policy is...
Here's some oil. You
know, let us not explore robustly.
Wait a minute. Where's
in places like Anwar.
Oh, it's under the rug here. Here's some oil.
They've got a bill up there in Congress now. Their attitude is, let's tax oil companies.
Oh, no!
Well, all that's going to do is make the price even higher.
Here, I know where there's some oil. I know where we can find some oil over here in this part of the hemispheric place. Here, there's some over here behind this bush. No, that's where the weapons of mass destruction are. Is this man the dumbest lump of DNA you've ever heard? What kind of hope can you offer to people who are in dire straits? And before the reporter got out the dire straits, this ass was saying, permanent tax, keep the tax cuts permanent, tax cuts, tax cuts. They'll cure baldness, make gout go away, end your croup, stop your dry mouth, and make restless leg syndrome disappear. Tax cuts! Of course, the tax cuts, George, you dumb bastard, is what caused this to begin with. Oh, man, this guy's got to go. You know, they have two up there in Congress is let's tax our oil companies. Oh, my God, let's not do that. Let's not tax it. Why should the oil companies be taxed? I mean, ExxonMobil only made $40 billion in profits. And the other oil companies, 20 and 30 and 10 and 19 and 40, 36. Why should they be taxed? Why should they be forced to clean up their messes? Why should they be subject to lawsuits either? I mean, the telecom companies, they should get immunity. ExxonMobil is looking for immunity before the Supreme Court. $2.5 billion to clean up what we did and all the livelihoods we destroyed 20 years ago? You got to be goddamn kidding me. What? We're ExxonMobil. We put this off for almost 20 years. Hell, our entire board of directors has flipped in that time. They've all retired with millions and hundreds of millions. And you want us to pay 6 weeks of our profits to the people of Alaska? Are you out of your freaking mind? It just never stops. It just never stops. I've got one more when we come back. If you if your gag reflex is still operating, you might not want to listen to this. But we'll play it when we come back, and then we're going to move on to your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Final hour of the Molloy program here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for hanging around. Last one from Mensa Man today, talking about money and stuff at his little press conference, where a reporter explained to him that gas prices, it's being predicted, are going to go to $4 a gallon before the summer's over. And, of course, Bush, huh, what, really? Oh, you're kidding. Damn. Now, as I said, if your gag reflex is still operating, get ready to gargle. The pain is almost over. Still on energy, this reporter says, Mr. President, on the oil price and tax breaks that we were talking about a minute ago, back when oil was $55 a barrel, you said those tax breaks were not needed. Tax breaks for the oil companies. People had plenty of incentive to drill for oil. Now the price of oil is $100 a barrel, and you're planning to threaten a plan that would shift those tax breaks to renewables?
I talk about some of the breaks.
Oh.
And this generally is a tax increase, and it doesn't make any sense to do it right now.
What?
We need to be exploring for more oil and gas. And taking money out of the coffers of the oil companies will make it harder for them to reinvest. I know they say, well, look at all the profits. Well, we're raising the price of gasoline in a time when the price of gasoline is high.
Whoa!
Secondly, we've invested a lot of money in renewables.
Yeah, we have.
Now, we got a problem with renewables.
Yeah, okay.
And that is the price of corn.
Yeah.
Is beginning to affect, food and, it's hurting hog farmers and a lot of folks. If you look at what's happened in corn out there, you're beginning to see the food the food issue and the energy issue collide.
Oh, God.
And we need more oil and gas being explored for. We need more drilling.
We need more drilling. You see, food issue and the energy issues collide. And when food and energy collide, Einstein said the black holes collapse or something. Is this the dumbest jackass you've ever heard? We need to be exploring for more oil and gas. Yeah, and taking money out of the coffers of the oil companies. Oh, those poor oil companies. They're down to their last few thousand billion. And the problem isn't price gouging by oil companies. It's corn! Corn! The price of corn is beginning to affect food. See? I diverted tens and tens and tens of dollars into corn and switchgrass and wood chips and fingernail clippings and all that other stuff. And now look, the price of corn is hurting hog farmers. Boy, you're a dumbass reporter. Don't you know that? We need more oil and gas. When food and energy collide, black holes collapse. Oh, my God. Oh, oh. Let it be over. Please let it be over. Please.
Yeah, tax increases on these enormous oil companies, that's not going to solve anything. What we need to do is figure out how to burn corn in a way that's not going to hurt the hog farmers. That's all. That and drill up the Alaskan wilderness. And we do those two things, and I don't know, 40, 50 years from now, we might have some more fuel.
The price of hogs and oil and corn, it's all collapsing. It's coming into this great big old hog corn oil collapse. Boom! Hog oil corn.
How much is gas? $4? No. You kidding me?
Who said that?
Where'd you hear that?
One of them pointy head liberal think tank thunks.
Some expert told you that. Now come over here and we'll talk about hogs.
Hogs and corn and oil and corn and hogs and... Oh my God. Okay. Let's try to bring some sanity back to the program. Let's do some phone calls here. Douglas is calling from Sacramento, listening on KSAC. Hi, Douglas.
Oh, hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Let's see. We're back to religion again, but before that, that economic thing just kind of, you're right, the gag reflex gets to be a problem. But it's advertising, you realize. He's not just lying. It's a particular kind of lie.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right, Douglas.
That's why he can afford to sound so dumb, because that's what advertising does. They just keep dinning away at what they want you to buy.
Yeah, and we've talked before, a genius in the advertising business, Jerry Delafamina, years ago wrote a book about how advertising works, and he said, and I pointed out before in this program, the two keywords in advertising are repetition and irritation. Those are the key words. If you lean on those, you can sell the American public anything.
I had a thought the other day. You know, journalists, lawyers, doctors, they all have, you know, standards of ethics. At least they're supposed to. But has anybody ever heard of any kind of code of ethics for advertisers? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist the guffaw. It just slipped out.
It sounds like somebody was strangling you, Douglas.
Well, that's
I was ready to do a 911 here.
I mean,
a code of ethics for advertising? Surely you jest.
Of course.
Advertising is, you know, look, in a capitalist society, 90% of the stuff that's out there, and I'm not exaggerating, I'm picking the number out of the air, 90%, but I'm sure it's not an exaggeration. 90% of the stuff that's out there is totally immaterial to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's nothing. It's garbage. It's junk. It's stuff that's going to be in the environment for, I don't know, 10, 20, 80 millennia. It's crap. It's garbage. It's awful. And it has to be sold to us over and over and over again. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But this gets us back to my point about religion. Why?
Oh, you had a point about religion. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's where we started. That's that's what I started with Ian.
Oh, okay, with Ian. Oh, I see. I was busy when you were talking with Ian. But
yes.
Okay, all right, get it back to religion.
Okay. That's why religion gets a pass in the corporate media.
Yeah, why?
Because they are in the corporatocracy. Because they buy ads, they pay media consultants, they fund focus groups. They're in the mix. Religion, especially televangelist religion,
Christianity.
It's in the advertising camp.
Yeah. You know what, Doug? Have you ever noticed on American TV, and probably on TV around the world with the exception of maybe Israel and maybe Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, there are no Jewish religious shows. There are no Muslim shows where they stand out there and try to convert you or preach to you or tell you that Armageddon is coming. Oh, I know you'll find maybe public affairs shows run by Muslims or public affairs shows run by Jews, but I'm talking about this crazy insanity that Christians do. What they have done, these Christian televangelists, they have taken, and I think any true believer in the teachings of Christ would rise up as an army and move around the country dragging these rat bastards out in the street and I don't know, flailing them, burying them in the dirt up to their heads and riding horses over them or something. Because what they have done, they have taken the body of Christ, the Christian Redeemer, the Christian Messiah, and they've sliced it into little pieces. They have pulled his corpse off the cross. They you know, they talk about how the Romans gambled for his robe. These filthy Christians, so-called, have dragged the body of Christ off the cross, cut it into little pieces, and sold it. And they continue to sell it every single day, and they've been doing it for two millennia. It's astonishing. But this crop that infests television on these broadcast networks that are financed by slobbering, mouth-breathing, hand-raising freaks, don't they understand what they have done? Don't they understand that they've taken Jesus Christ and turned him into a filthy, belligerent, nasty, death-eating commodity? It's unreal.
Jesus is just all right with me. Jesus is just all right. I don't care
It is essential that our parents understand that they're the child's most important teacher, and that the message of our parents must be unequivocal. Don't use drugs.
Twenty-one past the hour. Brandon in Brooklyn writes, Mike, I saw President Chucklenuts on CNN this afternoon at his press conference. In a nutshell, I had to restrain myself from yelling out at the TV. I was at my job. I had to restrain myself from yelling out, you lying sack of... Whoops. I managed to censor my language and say softly, you are such a liar. I laughed at Raisin Brand's attempts to justify the need for retroactive immunity for the big telecoms. I would describe it as the president made a poor attempt at obfuscation with his tongue-tied answer. He only ended up making himself dizzy. He was completely flabbergasted to the point where his answer ended up being nothing more than complete gibberish. And Mike writes, Mr. President, I was thinking about committing quite a few felonies, some bank robberies, maybe a few murders to get the money from any smart-ass teller or two who might be a little reluctant to part with some money, maybe some Grand Theft Auto to get an escape vehicle or two, maybe have to plug a few people clinging onto their cars as getaway vehicles should things not go smoothly. Well, I was thinking maybe there's an Al-Qaeda sympathizer among the people I may have to whack, and maybe the banks I rob have customers who sympathize with Al-Qaeda, or maybe an Al-Qaeda member has a safety deposit box in one of those banks. Well, I was thinking with all this action going on, some of which allegedly could be against the law. Well, I was thinking sincerely about all this, and I got to ask you, Mr. President, could you get me some of this immunity stuff? You know, the type you give to the phone companies? Get real, Mike. Oh, and by the way, why, you know, we talked about this on the program last night. Why did not one of the reporters, or the guy that was questioning Bush today, and enlightening Bush about $4 a gallon gasoline right around the corner, why didn't that reporter remind this dumb bastard standing at the podium that we are exporting gasoline to Nigeria, an oil-producing nation? You know why? Because the oil companies that own all the gasoline have a 14-month high in reserve inventories. They have so much gasoline sloshing around inside the borders of the United States that these filthy, murderous, capitalistic pigs are exporting the gasoline. George, hey, dumb person, George, we don't need to explore for more oil and gas, you halfwit. Your oil company buddies are exporting it. The United States of America is a gasoline exporting nation, while the price of gasoline for Americans continues to go higher and higher and higher. Dear God, how much more of this can we take?
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike. If Barack Obama gets a nomination, I'm going to vote for John McCain.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike. If Hillary Clinton gets a nomination, I'm going to vote for John McCain. I love Barack Obama. I love Hillary Clinton. But you know what? I don't like Hillary Clinton. You know what? I don't like Barack Obama. So if Barack Obama gets the nomination, I'm voting for John McCain. And I mean it. If Hillary Clinton gets the nomination, I'm voting for McCain.
Wake up, people. I'm not saying that Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama represent Democratic Party values. That happens to be Ralph Nader. But Ralph Nader is immaterial. Ralph Nader means nothing. Just remember, go to his website. Look at what Ralph Nader advocates. I'm not voting for him. No, hell no. I said last night, not me, not Mike Malloy. No. I'm voting for whatever corporate shill the Democratic Party tells me to vote for. Because you know why? Because because I don't want John McCain to win. But if you really want all those things that you say and I say that we really, 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 really want. We really, really, really do. Like single-payer health care. All those things we really, 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 really want. You'll find them at Ralph Nader's website. You'll find them at Ralph Nader's platform. But you know what? You and I, good Democrats that we are, we don't really want that. We don't. We don't want all those things we say we want. Because you know why? Because if we did, if we really, 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 really did, we would not allow corporate America to tell us who to vote for, and then reduce the choices down to their two candidates. That's what. So, if you want your answers, go to the Ralph Nader for President website. Or not.
We thought you were already fine, and you don't have to take it.
A flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Fly into the sun. Fly into the sun.
It's about 25 before the hour. We export gasoline. Well, not we, the oil companies, the gasoline owners, you know. Chris is calling from Cave Creek, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Chris.
Hi, yeah, Mike. I love your show, and longtime listener, and a few calls before, too. So
Yes, you have.
You know, I just would like to say, first of all, about the whole religion issue, these people who are in the middle, or who are the moderates of their religion, I don't care which one it is, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, whatever, they need to stand up in public, on television, on radio, whatever, and say, these fringe lunatics do not represent us. And if they don't, they are just as bad because they are complicit in the actions of these theocratic dominionist twits.
Yeah, I know some try to do that. I think Rabbi Lerner at Tikkun Magazine tries to do that. I think there are some mainstream Christian leaders who try to do that. I think there are some very, very, very few. But your point is absolutely right on target. As long as these mouth-breathing, snake-handling freaks, I mean, what the hell is a so-called church with 18,000 members like Hagee's masturbatory exercise down in Texas? You know, Jesus said, where two or three are gathered together in my name, there is my church.
Yeah, well, Jesus said a lot of things these people don't believe in. I mean, that's just a fact.
Well,
and so of Muhammad and a whole bunch of other people, you know. But that's just the way they are. And I would also put forth the idea that in 1797, when John Adams signed the Treaty of Tripoli, he specifically stated this country is, quote, not a Christian nation. So what is this attitude that we are suddenly... all of us are in love with Jesus. What is this?
It has to do with fear and loathing. These Christians like Hagee are this is my opinion, are their insides are just eaten up with worms. Their minds are polluted with they've read too much of the Book of Revelation. They find no joy in living. They imagine some kind of a paradise that makes the Muslim idea of paradise look like chump change. These people they hate life. They hate all life. They want the end of the world to hurry up and get here. They want death and destruction so that they can get out of their bloated bodies and float up to heaven where they think, I don't know what they think. I have no idea, but they are sick, degenerate, fear-riven idiots. And the fact that they attract adherents, the fact that people will go into a building on Sunday morning or turn on a television and watch this putrid garbage that is decaying and inspired by death and murder and mayhem and Armageddon and wars and blood, rivers of blood. I'm sure you saw the movie, as soon as I say it, the one about the Kathy, the big hotel where Jack Nicholson went and he was the caretaker.
Shining.
And the Shining. Thank you. The pictures in The Shining of all the blood that was just boiling up around the elevators and the carpeted hallways. This is what these fake Christians want. They want rivers of blood. They want corpses and decapitated babies. They're like a Hieronymus Bosch painting. They picture demons biting the heads off of people, an incubus and succubus erupting out of human bodies. They are sick! And they make me sick.
Indeed.
But anyway.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling, Chris. You have a nice evening. I get so carried away about this religion thing. I don't think anything drives me crazier than the religious issue. Because I see, as anyone can see, the horrific damage that's been done by the false prophets. I am not saying that people who teach the teachings of Jesus or Muhammad or the Buddha or the Hindu books that these people are bad. They're not bad people. If they teach the teachings of these enlightened individuals who spoke metaphorically in so many instances, you know, get your act together here. Didn't Jesus say, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man heareth, let me enter, for within you is the kingdom of God. And you can find so many examples of that in every single religion. It starts out as some kind of a look. Here's how you're going. Here's a means of coping in this cold, bitter, sad life. Here's how to cope. Here's how to do it. Elevate yourself. Love your neighbor. Do unto others. Is there any religion that doesn't say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you? Is there any religion that doesn't say, treat your neighbor like yourself? Be generous. Be kind. Be understanding. Be tolerant. Welcome the stranger into your home. Clothe the naked. Feed the hungry. Take care of the sick. Visit those in prison. Isn't that what religion should be? No. What spiritualism, what rising above our physical prison, isn't that what it's supposed to be? And then you have some bloated, filthy murderer, potential murderer like James Haggy, who wants nothing more than to see his Jesus step out of the heavens with flaming swords and death and blood so he can step up and say to the Jews, accept or die. Ooh, I'm starting to scare myself. I don't like them. I don't like these religious freaks. I don't care if they're Christian or Jewish or Muslim. I don't like them. Or Hindu. I don't like them because they're all about fear and death and murder and destruction and believe my way or I will cut your throat and let my children walk around in your blood. Ah! Stop! Please, just adopt a secular humanist point of view. I'm telling you that, never mind. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Bristol, PA, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right, although it doesn't sound like I am, but I really am.
Yeah, you seem like you're a little frustrated tonight with this whole religious babble and, you know.
Oh, my God. Don't. Yeah, well, anyway, the real reason you called is?
Like, you already covered it, the whole thing with Jerusalem. Well, not Jerusalem, Israel, you know. I don't understand why they all just can't get along, you know, and just leave each other alone. Because, like, originally, that whole strip that they're living on, was there was nothing on it, and nobody wanted to land, you know. And right after World War II, they shipped all the Jews over there, and they turned it from, like,
No, wait. I appreciate your effort at explaining to me the history of the establishment of the State of Israel, but nobody shipped the Jews over, and, you know, there was many civilizations that originated in what is now called Israel. There were all sorts of tribal groups that saw God because they ate too many wild mushrooms and stuff. So I appreciate what you're trying to say, Joe. I don't want to get into that, you know. And you need to, before you want to talk to me about the establishment of the State of Israel, you have to explain to our associate producer, Ian, who answers the phone, what your scholarship is about that issue. Because so many Americans don't know a damn thing about it. Really. And I'm just saying that on this program, you know, we talk about it a lot. We've gone into the history going back into the middle of the 19th century, the Zionist movement, the Palestinians, So when I get somebody who wants to talk about that, you've got to establish your bona fides on that particular subject long before you make it onto the air. And the reason for it is I cannot stand just gratuitous bashing of either side in that sad, horrific conflict. Okay? No offense intended to your phone call. I'm just saying, you know, you've got to be screened fairly deeply before you come on the air and talk about that subject, all right? All right. Thank you very much. Quick break. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Quality of mercy is my strength. Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is my strength.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is my strength.
Victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is my strength.
Murderers and martyrs.
Ten before the hour. Oh, and by the way, my response, I've already gotten a couple of emails. Oh, my God. My response to that last caller, when I say that, you know, you have to be screened on that issue by our associate producer, Ian, who answers the phone, I don't mean screened for your point of view. I mean just screened so that, you know, I don't care what your point of view is. You could be pro-Israel, pro-Palestinian, you know, bring it on. But screened to find out whether or not you have at least a working knowledge of what happened. to that sad strip of country at the eastern end of the Mediterranean. I mean, you've got to be able to at least have some sort of a working knowledge. Now, you can build on that your own point of view. I do not question your point of view, provided, well, I do question it, but provided you've got at least a working knowledge of, you know, nobody shipped the Jews to thanks to the crew who assisted once again tonight. They all should be arrested, but once again, they put this program together. Ian Huff, who associate producer, answered your calls. Billy Foster, who is the technical director. Our podcast manager, Ben Birch. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. Bridget Wolf, our writer in residence. And Catherine Bay, the executive producer of this program. Back to your phone calls. Len is calling from New York, listening on the Internet. Hey, Len.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay, thanks. You know, you were talking about drilling before, and when I think about drilling with Bush, you know, I'm thinking of Dustin Hoffman in the chair and getting drilled in the teeth. Is it safe yet?
Yeah. Yeah, that was one hell of a movie. That put me off Dennis just long enough so all my teeth rotted.
Right. I mean, Bush is still trying to find those diamonds. Must be those diamonds somewhere. But I was calling because I was watching the debates with my wife, you know, who wasn't convinced that you can trust Barack Obama, you know, only because she just doesn't know him well enough and,
right,
you know, hasn't looked into his soul, I guess, as closely as most of us have, mm-hmm, who feel he's the best choice. But when it came to that Farrakhan question, you know, and Tim Russert kept going back at him, it was almost to the point where Obama should have been able to use some humor and go, Tim, if it'll make you happy, I'll shoot him. You know,
No. He couldn't say that. But like I've been talking about tonight, why doesn't Tim Russert or anybody raise the issue of these Christian fundamentalists who back McCain? I mean, the whole show tonight has kind of been built around that concept, dragging out the Farrakhan issue to every black candidate that comes along. They did this to Sharpton, who was not really serious. They did it to Jesse Jackson. Drag out Farrakhan. What is up with that? I mean, it's just nonsense. Anybody who has followed the track of Minister Farrakhan knows where he stands, knows what he said over the years, and also
he
knows
backed
that,
off a lot of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. We talked about that the other night. You know, his real anti-Jew hatred he has come away from. I remember watching one of his programs within the past, 10 years, where he had a couple of Orthodox rabbis up on the podium with him, and the rabbis were there, I guess, to serve the same function that a Catholic priest serves when someone's dying, and that's to provide Farrakhan with extreme unction to allow him an escape hatch for all the anti-Semitic stuff that had come out of him all those years. So it's I just get so sick. Farrakhan is totally irrelevant to anything that happens in this country.
Well, the reality is I think Obama's going to win this in the next couple of weeks, and I'm hoping because, you know, and actually you've given me more insight recently to why I definitely don't want Hillary. And in the scheme of things, I think this is still not even the top of the first. This is still like, you know, the pregame exercises. And
yeah, I think it's going to get intense. Let's see what happens.
I don't know, because I'm just trying to juxtapose. I'm hoping he's going to be just standing there with his relative coolness next to McCain. People are going to open up, you know, McCain's storybook, and they're going to get pretty revolted.
There's kind of...
Go ahead.
Huh?
I'm sorry. It was you earlier who was talking about his 10% rating from the Children's
Defense Fund, right.
Defense Fund. My feeling is, you know, with the Nader coming out, Obama raised $50 million in February. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's astounding. and because this is all primary money. And I think, you know, if the, your average Joe is just so sick of the right wing that they probably can make the difference in the polls by November. And remember Muqtada al-Sadr? You saw that story about him last week, right?
He said he could stop the Iraq war anytime he wants.
He could restart it.
Or restart? Is that what he said? He could restart? I'm sorry. I heard somebody talking about it. I got it asked backwards. All right. He could restart it. Well, he's got the biggest army in Iraq after the U.S.
He's put his truce on up until August, and he's going to decide whether or not to start trouble in August, he said.
Good. Well, that's nice.
Hopefully we'll see some light at the end of this tunnel. But, you know, after that Siegelman story being blacked out in Alabama, my wife, you know, just I said, you can't make this up, you know. And she just, you know, doesn't. I said, you got to watch the story Sunday night. You can understand why I hate these guys so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then on Monday night, I tell her that it was blacked out in Alabama. She just really couldn't believe it.
This is United States of America 2008. The weird stuff goes on. Len, we're finished tonight. Thanks for checking
in. Have a great one.
All right, you take care. And if you did get on the program, I see the board here is just full of phone calls. I apologize. We'll try it again tomorrow night. All right? Have a good night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.